From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. On the panel this week, Tom DeFrank, contributing editor to the National Journal, and Patsy Whitaker-Zwara, VOA White House correspondent. Our moderator is Paul Brandis, columnist for USA Today and West Wing Reports.
Hello, thank you for joining us, and here are the issues. The so-called G20 summit in Japan, the stakes are high as global leaders discuss trade, security, and other vital issues. Tensions between the United States and Iran remain high. Meantime, a conference in Bahrain with implications for Israel and the Palestinian Authority. Here in the United States, immigration and the border crisis continues. We'll have an update on what Congress, the Trump administration, Mexico, and others are doing. And the former special counsel who led the investigation into possible ties between Russia and the Trump campaign and Russia's involvement in the 2016 election will testify before Congress. Well, let's start with this G20 summit in Japan. A lot of issues being discussed, a lot of things on the agenda, but overshadowing all of this is, of course, this trade spat between the United States and China. It does not look like it's getting better. The Chinese making a fresh round of demands here, Tom.
Right. The Chinese, I believe, are starting to get their back up. They believe, rightly or wrongly, that the United States is treating them unfairly in the whole trade proposition. President Trump, of course, places great store by personal relationships, and he has been talking for about 2 weeks how he is confident that he and President Xi can work this out and work out a deal, but I don't think that's going to happen on this summit, Paul. I think it's going to take several months. A lot of experts seem to think that China needs a deal, the U.S. needs a deal, and while the Chinese are clearly miffed at the U.S., and specifically President Trump, for allegedly changing the rules of the game, I suspect there'll be a deal by the end of the year, but not immediately.
Patsy, China is making some of these demands that appear fresh. They're now saying that the U.S. must end its ban on Huawei, that, of course, the big Chinese telecom company. They also want Trump to not only lift these tariffs, but also drop his demands that China buy more American goods. It seems like they're really pushing the president a little bit here.
Right, and this is the terms that we are expecting Xi Jinping to lay out for President Trump. And President Trump's same optimism, or, you know, he voiced optimism about this talk. You know, in true Trump fashion, he says he's not very specific about anything, but he just says that at a minimum, it will be productive. We'll see what happens and what comes out of it. And he calls it a very exciting day. One important thing, though, to underscore is that President Trump is denying reports that he had promised not to impose any new tariffs on China in order to arrange this meeting with Xi Jinping. And we know that White House senior aides have just gone through the legal steps for him to impose those tariffs of up to 25% on $300 billion of American imports from China. But there's no timetable yet that's given for when he might actually do so or if he might actually do so. This could be just another thing overshadowing the talks. But I do agree that whatever happens, it's unlikely to solve all the complications of the tariff wars and the trade war that's been going on.
You know, we've been hearing that this trade deal with China is about 90% done, but we've been hearing that for many months now. It's this last 10% of the deal that is always difficult to intellectual property and allegations of Chinese hacking and stealing American secrets. These kind of things, the United States wants tougher standards surrounding these kind of things. And these, Tom, these are the holding things that are holding the deal up.
Well, that's right. And I don't see a lot of wiggle room on either side on this last 10% or so. I think the Chinese have especially gotten their backs up on some of these things that the president wants. They basically think he's right or wrong. They think he's trying to get them to change the way they do business. And some Chinese leaders think this is an assault on the essence of the Chinese, or what one aide years ago in another administration called their essential Chineseness. And if that is the case, and of course I don't know, but if that is the case, that will make this last 10% even more difficult. So I think there is a path towards a deal, and I continue to believe that both sides in the end want a deal, even if it's less than either side is thrilled about.
Patsy, China is not the only thing that has been on President Trump's radar. In Japan, he also had a meeting with Vladimir Putin. He, of course, the Russian leader. How did that go? And what's sort of the big picture here? You cover the White House. What's the big picture on kind of a U.S.-Russian relations at the moment?
The big news that came out of the meeting between President Trump and Vladimir Putin is the comment that Trump made in regards to Russian election meddling. We should note that this is the first meeting. This is the first meeting between Trump and Putin since the special counsel Robert Mueller's report on Russian election meddling. And the two leaders made no mention of that issue or other points of contention between them until a journalist asked Trump if he would ask Putin not to meddle in the American elections. And the president basically chuckled and looked at Putin with a grin, jokingly saying, don't meddle in the election. And so that was the big news that came out of it. A lot of people are talking about how, you know, President Trump, again, is dismissing this idea that Russia is meddling in the U.S. election. And the other thing that came out of that interruption is the two of them also shared a chuckle on the problem of, quote-unquote, fake news, sharing this space for journalists both in the U.S. and in Russia. So those are the two big top news that came out of the bilat.
Meantime, moving on, tensions between the United States and Iran continue. As everybody knows, the Trump administration nearly attacked Iran about a week ago. It came within about 10 minutes of doing so. The attack was then called off. But ever since then, there's been kind of a trading of insults between Trump and the Iranian leadership. It seems, Tom, that neither country wants a war here, but is that desire enough to actually avoid one?
Well, let us hope so, Paul, but it's not clear that is enough. You have to know that the Iranians are really hurting. I think the Trump and Western alliance sanctions have really caused the Iranians big economic trouble. Their economy is a basket case. In the last several days, further sanctions have been imposed on Iran, and I think they're somewhat desperate. And I think their decision to shoot down an American unarmed drone reconnaissance vehicle was part of their way of saying, we're not hopeless, you haven't brought us to our knees. But the fact is, Iran has got all sorts of problems. On the other hand, I think Iran has judged correctly that the president does not want to start a war with Iran. Some of his advisors do, his Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, and his National Security Advisor, John Bolton, are infamous hawks around the president. And the president basically says, don't worry, I make the calls here, and I'm not going to war. But I think we're looking at months of tension here, but I don't think we're going to I'd be very surprised if there was a real honest-to-goodness war. There might be a couple of pinpricks here, but the problem in the Middle East is that any sort of military action can quickly spin out of control given the emotions and the tensions in the region.
And Patsy, quickly, it's important to remember, of course, that President Trump, as a candidate, said that America's involvement in the Middle East was just a huge waste of money, trillions of dollars spent in this kind of thing. And he's always said that we need to focus on issues, problems here at home. So getting involved in yet another Middle East war is not exactly something that he wants, as Tom said.
Exactly. He campaigned on stopping what he called the never-ending wars, and that's why it was really surprising when on Thursday in the Oval Office, when reporters asked him, does he have an exit strategy on Iran, all he said was, I don't need an exit strategy, seemingly confirming that we're not going to war with Iran. However, he hasn't really articulated his strategy for containing Iran, particularly in the G20. There will be skeptical world leaders who will ask him, what do you plan to do after you pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal? And exactly what is your message in slapping these latest rounds of sanctions and whether it's effective? Because essentially, when President Trump is sanctioning the leadership of Iran, you know, Khamenei, he's signaling that he wants regime change, even though he says the opposite. Now, as we know, Trump pointed out that John Bolton has clearly stated that his goal is regime change, even though President Trump has said that that's not what he wants. And again, these latest rounds of sanctions, what does it do when so much has already been done? It almost shows that the U.S. is out of economic pressure tools already, because the Iranian oil sales are now down to, what, 300,000 barrels, down from 2.5 to 3 million barrels before the sanctions were applied. And exactly, the economy is suffering so much. So this signals a question of, is the U.S. serious about negotiating, particularly if they are targeting Foreign Minister Zarif? Then how can you negotiate seriously when you are slapping sanctions on the diplomat that's supposed to be negotiating?
Now, quickly, Tom, with about a minute here, let's sort of stay in the Middle East, briefly talk about this other interesting event. The United States, of course, has been hosting this conference in Bahrain, aimed, we hear, kind of jump-starting the Palestinian economy. It's interesting, though, that representatives from the Palestinian Authority and Israel, too, are not even at the conference, and there's also nothing been said about a political solution between these two entities either. So what exactly is going on?
I think this is an opportunity for Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law and the architect of the Trump administration's Middle East peace plan. It gives him an opportunity to take the stage, but there's nothing going on here. You're right, Paul. Both the Palestinians and the Israelis are basically saying this peace plan is dead on arrival, nothing's going to happen. So I think this is a lot of talk and a lot of smoke, and I don't think it amounts to anything.
Okay, well, let's pause for a short break. More issues in the news in just a moment.
Issues in the News is coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. While you're there, go ahead and check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also, visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel, Tom DeFrank, contributing editor to the National Journal, and Patsy Whitaker-Zwara, VOA White House correspondent. Our moderator is Paul Brandon, columnist for USA Today and West Wing Reports.
Bipartisan legislation to address the humanitarian crisis along the U.S.-Mexican border, and will provide funds to take care of migrants, particularly children, amid reports that kids are sleeping on cold floors with the lights on all night, some report not getting enough food. Tom, there was a big difference between talking about this bill that was signed, big difference between what Republicans wanted and what Democrats wanted.
Well, the Democrats wanted more guarantees in this bill to make sure that there would be more funds to help kids, especially kids separated from their parents. The Democrats are worried that this bill that has now been passed by Congress doesn't have enough basic humanitarian assistance, and that they're very worried about that. I think this is going to be a real flashpoint within the Democratic Party between the liberals, who wanted more, and the pragmatists led by Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Setting aside the politics, though, the good news is at least there is now legislation sending at least $4.5 billion to the border for aid. That's a good thing, not a bad thing, but I think the issue is just now joined, and there's going to be more tension between the White House and the Democratic-controlled House on what to do about these kids. I mean, all of this, I think, obscures the fact that, according to the U.S. government, in the month of May, 144,000 immigrants had come into the United States, and that's a big number. It's a number that's getting larger and larger, and the president is getting angrier and angrier about it. And so I think we're going to just have more turmoil, more tension, more politics, and more humanitarian heartbreak at the border.
Patsy, meantime, what is the status of the border wall that President Trump has, as everybody knows, made a signature issue back in 2015 when he announced his campaign? We know that portions of it have been built, parts of it has been sort of revitalized, fencing, this kind of thing. Bring our listeners up to date on sort of where all this stands.
Well, every chance he gets, President Trump will bring up the topic of the border wall. He will stress again that the border wall is being built, and in his words, is being built better, stronger, cheaper, more beautiful. But the reality is that there's a lot of issues, right? There's so many issues. For example, there was a GoFundMe border wall that was being built in New Mexico, and now it's just been decided that it was illegally built, so the landowner could face jail time. So this is not an easy issue. It's a complicated issue, and it involves a lot of stakeholders, including state and local government, and they may not necessarily be on the same page as the president. On the one hand, the White House, President Trump, clearly is trying to send a message that his border wall, his campaign promise, is being fulfilled, but on the ground, it's not that simple.
And beyond that, we're talking sort of about a 2,000-mile border here. The president said that, well, it's going to be super high, 20 feet high, 30 feet high. Well, here we are, 2.5 years into his administration. At the end of his four-year term, there could be a second term, of course, but at the end of this four-year term, Tom, what is actually going to be done here?
Well, I think there'll be some segments of new wall built, but the massive border wall that the president talks about all the time will be far from completed. All of this, I think, and I've thought this for a long time, the president is obsessed. He's obsessed, and that sounds pejorative. I don't mean it to be pejorative, but he is intent on fulfilling this promise, securing the border, because that is one of the central themes, central visceral issues to tens of millions of his base. Most of his base cares about two things. They care about repealing abortion rights in this country, and they care passionately about sealing the border. The president is intent on proving that he is doing everything he can to seal the southern border. If he fails in that respect, it's because of the Democrats. That's going to be his proposal. So he is seized with this, as they say at the United Nations. He is seized with this as a personal and political issue. But I think the progress that he will be able to show will be less than he would have liked.
But I suppose as part of that answer, Tom, is people need to remember that for the first 2 years of his term, his party, the Republican Party, had both the House and the Senate, which would have been a golden time for him to really push forward on this. But even that did not happen. Now, of course, he's trying to get things done with this mixed Congress. So it seems even much harder now than it was in the first half of his term.
No doubt about it, Paul. Much more difficult. And also, he's got some hardliners around him at the White House, including his chief domestic policy advisor named Stephen Miller, who's not only hostile to illegal migration, but he's hostile to legal migration. Republican senators who are supportive of President Trump have said publicly, some of them, that there will never be a deal as long as Mr. Miller is calling the shots for the president on this one. So I agree with you. It is a lot tougher than it might be, but this is central to the president's political base, and he will continue to push for this, but it's going to be frustrating for him, I think.
Talking about this Mueller report, which came out about 2 months ago, it said that there was no collusion between the Trump campaign and any Russian entity. It was less certain, though, in saying that there was any obstruction of justice. Nevertheless, that hasn't stopped the president from saying no collusion, which appears to be true, and no obstruction, which is not quite as clear. Now, Patsy, as we know, Mr. Mueller, who headed this special counsel for the better part of 2 years, is now going to testify before Congress in mid-July on all of this. This appears to be a rather big deal. It's going to be before a national television audience. Give us kind of a curtain raiser here. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, first of all, the president was very visibly upset when we asked him about Robert Mueller's testimony. He said, this thing will just never end. The Democrats want a do-over. We've already spent so much money. I've allowed so many interviews. I've been the most transparent president in the history of whatever it was that he said. Yet, it's still not enough. And this thing has got to stop. It's been too much resources spent, and the Democrats can't have a do-over. Again, this will be another thing that will just continue to be a point of contention for the president. And it's also a rallying cry for his base, right? Because most of his base believe him when he says that this is the biggest hoax of the century, I believe that's what he called it on Thursday. And they said that this is the Democrats basically playing sour grapes and not wanting to admit that the president won fair and square. So when I speak to Trump supporters in particular, they absolutely do not support this idea of a continued process with the investigations that's being done by the Democrats, in particular in regards to the Mueller testimony. You know, if this inches forward, moves forward towards an impeachment process, it could really be something that could rally his base, and it could be beneficial for President Trump politically ahead of 2020.
Now, Tom, it's worth remembering, of course, that in this Mueller report, 448 pages, he does list, the special counsel does list 10 possible instances of obstruction of justice, emphasis on a possible obstruction of justice. So when the president says no obstruction, that is not definitely so. And I think we can expect that that he's certainly going to be asked about these 10 items.
Right. I think what the Democrats want is they want to compel Mr. Mueller to talk about these 10 instances. You know, when the president says no obstruction, you're right, that's not correct. He would be correct if he said no charges of obstruction of justice. But Mueller said in his report that basically there were 10 instances of possible obstruction, but these charges were not pursued because the Justice Department said a sitting president cannot be indicted on anything. And so I think the Democrats want to raise public awareness of what those 10 instances of alleged obstruction of justice actually are. That's where they're hoping, because let's face it, most Americans have not read those 448 pages. Probably 99.6% of the country has not read those pages, and so they want to raise awareness for their own political purposes, and also to lay a predicate for possible impeachment if it becomes clearer that might be warranted. We'll have to see about that.
Now, Patsy, on that point, the possibility that House Democrats could move to impeach the president, Tom made a good point about these Mueller testimony may be laying the groundwork for that. Does that explain why House Speaker Pelosi has been sort of reluctant to pull the trigger, if you will, on actually beginning impeachment? She thinks that the public is not quite there yet. What's your sense of that?
I think what our listeners have to understand is that the impeachment process under the American political system is the House will indict, but the Senate has to pull the trigger. So it has to be both houses in Congress that agree to an impeachment. And under the current political situation right now, where the Republicans control the Senate, even if the House were to impeach President Trump, then he could be acquitted in the Senate. And that's the thing that Nancy Pelosi and other Democratic leadership want to avoid. They want to avoid indicting President Trump, rallying his base, delivering him another victory in 2020, and yet still cannot impeach him because the Senate would not agree to it. I think this is a really difficult strategy for the Democrats. You know, they have a lot of very progressive, very liberal, I believe it's around about 80 House members from the Democratic side and maybe one from the Republican side who agree or who wants to push for an impeachment process now. But Nancy Pelosi knows that it could be a political miscalculation if they start now. And so what they're trying to do now, their strategy is basically just slowly try to build the case, perhaps moving towards impeachment, but not yet, and certainly not calling it an impeachment process, but mainly going through investigations and hopefully finding more and more information about what happened. We have to remember that the White House has flat out said that they are stonewalling, they're ignoring all calls for subpoenas.
We're going to have to end it right there. Our thanks to two of Washington's most prominent journalists, Patsy Wittes-Kuwara, she's White House correspondent for The Voice of America, and Tom DeFrank, he's contributing editor for National Journal. This program was produced by Kim Lewis, our engineer Justin Thwaites. And I'm Paul Brandis of West Wing Reports. Thank you for joining us.